Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Nintzel, executive editor for the Tucson Weekly and other Tucson local media publications, and this is Zona Politics. Today, we are talking with Carol Varney, the executive director of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona. Carol, welcome to Zona Politics.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
And this is the organization that was formerly known as the Tucson Pima Arts Council. And talk a little bit about what it is that the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona does.
Sure. We are funded primarily by the City of Tucson and Pima County. And in our role with the city and the county, we manage the public art program for both of those entities. We provide grant support to artists and arts organizations in the region, and we also offer professional development opportunities for artists and arts organizations, and generally hope that we can support advocacy for the arts regionally.
And you are going to be having a conversation about public art maintenance and preserving it into the future tomorrow. And what time is that, and where is it going to be?
Sure, it's at 5:30, and it's at the University of Arizona College of Fine Arts. I believe it's in the music building. It's about an hour and a half, and for 45 minutes, we'll be hearing directly from Rosa Lowinger, who's the principal of Rosa Lowinger and Associates, which is the firm that we ended up hiring after a national search for a conservation agency that could look at the city of Tucson's public art and tell us in a comprehensive way what kinds of maintenance efforts would be needed to kind of bring it all up to date.
And first of all, let's just talk about some of the major pieces of public art in Tucson. I'm sure folks have seen them, but they might not recognize that these are pieces of public art that were paid for through TPAC and through the City of Tucson and Pima County. So just talk about some of those pieces that people might be aware of.
Sure. Well, I think that the one that everyone probably recognizes, whether or not they think of it as public art just created by the city through the 1% program, is the Diamondback Bridge. And that's, I think, sometimes people colloquially refer to it as the Rattlesnake Bridge, but it's the Snake Bridge that when you come into downtown Tucson that you see. So that was a project of the 1% program. And then there are statues all over the city. The Expo Fountain downtown, that's part of the TCC, is also a piece of public art, one of the oldest pieces of public art. It's actually a bench that's across the street from the Children's Museum. So those are just a few examples, but there's really public art all over the city thanks to the 1% program.
And including next to the Rattlesnake Bridge, those tiles as you come into downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yes, exactly. Yes.
And you mentioned you have funding from Tucson and Pima County. Where does that you have a kind of a combination of things? Some of it comes from major infrastructure projects, and some of it comes from a bed tax. Talk a little bit about where the funding comes from.
Sure. I can talk about, if we're talking specifically about the public art program, it's called the 1% for Art program, and it's something that was instated in lots of cities around the country in probably the early 1980s. And Tucson was amongst the first cities, and Pima County amongst the first counties nationally to adopt a 1% program. So what that means is that for every major capital improvement project, so capital improvement project of $100,000 or more, 1% of the construction cost is set aside for the creation of public art. So our organization doesn't actually, we get a tiny, tiny sliver of that money. Most of that money goes to the artist and to the creation of the art. And the city has a public art collection and the county has a public art collection, and they're separate.
And talk a little bit about that process of how you go about selecting artists for a project.
Sure. So project managers with the city or with the county will contact us when they have a capital improvement project coming along. They work with Jeff DaCosta, who's our public art manager, and share information about what the project looks like, where the project is located, the budget for the project, and then we work with them to put together a request for proposals. So we put that request for proposal together and post it both nationally and in fact some of the websites that we post on have an international audience, as well as through our e-news on our website, social media, etc. And we have a process that's open with details of the RFP available to anyone who wants to apply. There's an online submission process. Once we have the deadline and we go through to determine who of the applicants is eligible to apply, Jeff convenes a community panel, and I would encourage anyone listening who's interested in public art to get involved, especially in their community neighborhood association, because that's where we oftentimes pull people from for the panels that look at the public art proposals. So the committee comes together, does this kind of initial cut of people they might want to see and interview. Then there's an interview process with the artist, and then there are some policy related components that we need to go through, but that probably isn't of interest to too many people except for us internally.
Yeah,
and eventually there is a community panel that the public art community design committee of the city and the county says, yes, go ahead with this artist with this plan. And then the artist works with the committee to design the final project.
And so now you're going to have this conversation tomorrow on Monday about the challenge of maintaining public art so we preserve it into the future. As you said, this has been around for several decades now. Talk about the challenge when it comes to maintenance of these pieces.
Sure. Well, it was really interesting for us when we did learn that we have had a little bit of money from the city to look at public art maintenance. It is something that the city hadn't really put too much money aside for historically. The money was set aside for the creation of the art, but not for the maintenance of the art. So when we learned that we had this money, we tried to determine what the best use of this money would be. I talked with people in my position all around the country to ask them what best practices were in this regard. And what I did learn is that Tucson is absolutely not alone. In fact, most cities across the country have not put aside maintenance money and have had to go through the same process that we're going through now. So the recommendation was that we put out an RFP and we find a conservation firm that specializes in public art to come and look at the collection, which is what we did. A committee chose Rosa Lowinger and Associates. They're based out of both Los Angeles and Miami. They came in and they have looked at almost all of the collection, not the entire collection because we had a few too many pieces to cover, but there are more than 150 pieces in the collection. And really, as we talked earlier, you know, it's everything from a bridge to a sculpture to murals, tile work. And they went through with a fine-tooth comb and looked at all of the potential issues for each of the pieces and are giving us a very, very thorough report on everything that would be required to update the pieces. And it's everything from, you know, new paint to new tile work to new metal work and so much more. So it's a lot to do, but it's great to have a baseline from which we can go forward.
And what are you hoping comes out of this conversation you're having tomorrow?
I hope that it helps people in the community to better understand what is in the collection that we have here in Tucson, appreciate the work that's gone into it, and also so that we and the city understand what a real asset this is for the community and how important it is to maintain it for longevity. Because I know for certain, even though I've only been in this position a little more than a year, I hear so much about public art from the community and how important it is to everyone. And so I hope that we can all work collectively to maintain that incredible community asset.
And, you know, critics will say, you know, government has no role in funding the arts. Why are we wasting tax dollars that could go for roads or what have you? And I would like you to address that argument and respond to those critics.
Sure. Well, one thing I always like to say is, can you imagine downtown without the public art? Or could you imagine Tucson without the public art? Is it a place that you would want to live? Is it a place that you would want to walk around? And I know that when I moved here, one of the reasons that I was compelled to move to Tucson is because there was public art and I could see how much the art, literally see how much the art meant to the community because it was an investment they had made. And as an example, I'll just share that in terms of economic development, I think The arts is a key component for economic development. Any large company that scouts out this region is going to look to see if the arts are a component of what we offer in the community. And there are many cities around the country that have been told by large companies they will not relocate their headquarters there because they are not a community that clearly cares about the arts. And that's something that is a big emphasis and can be a real economic driver. And we saw from a study done by the NEA last year that in Arizona, the arts have an incredibly important impact on our economy in the billions of dollars. So that's what I'd say to critics.
Yeah, talk a little bit about our overall funding for public art in Southern Arizona. Last I heard, on a per capita basis, Tucson is way behind similar cities of its size.
This is true. I would say that in terms of public art, you know, the formula that we use is the same as other cities around the country, and that it's 1% of the construction cost for capital improvement projects over a certain amount. We're actually interested in trying to move to a 2% model, and that's something that we've been in conversation with both the city and the county about, and I'm hopeful that we can do that because, you know, the cost of public art goes up just as the cost of everything else goes up over time. And I think that we have a real opportunity, if we look at moving to 2% for public art, to creating some pieces that would really be drivers for our economy in a different way, because if we had some real sort of unusual pieces of public art that were very well done, that can actually drive tourism. So we're hopeful that we might be able to do that moving forward. And generally speaking, I think, you know, it's clear to me that the Southern Arizona community is still recovering from the economic downturn. But of late, we're kind of on the upswing, and it's been a very slow go. But I'm hopeful that the arts will be a larger component of what we're able to look to in the city and county to fund as the economy continues to improve.
And outside of the public art projects, what else does the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona do in terms of supporting the arts?
We have grant programs for artists and arts organizations. We have 5 different grant programs, as well as an event sponsorship program. And that's also something that we've been able to increase in the last year, and we hope to increase yet more in the coming year, because it is something that we're definitely far behind cities of our size nationally in terms of how much grant funding we give out. So last year it was a little over $200,000. Next year we're hoping to be closer to $300,000. We'll see how our budgets turn out. We'll know that pretty soon. And also professional development opportunities, because we want Tucson artists to be competitive nationally, and we want our nonprofit arts organizations to be competitive nationally in terms of grant funding. So, for example, in the last year, we had a free grant writing workshop. We also brought the National Endowment for the Arts in to be part of a funding panel with other arts funders to try to help the arts community locally better understand what kinds of resources are available to them, both in the community and outside of the community for funding.
And are you get money from the city and the county. Do you get any help from the state at all?
We do. We get a relatively small grant from the Arizona Commission for the Arts. That's just based on our budget size. So as our budget size grows, so too could our support from the state.
And if folks want to also support public art, what can they do to help?
They could do several things. One thing they could do is, as I mentioned, be in touch with their neighborhood association and become an active voice on any public art panels that are relevant to their community. And we also accept donations towards both public art and public art maintenance. That's something that we've been focusing on a little bit in the last year. The donations that are made to the Arts Foundation can be restricted either for grant funding or for public art. So if people are interested, they could check out our website or be in touch, and I'd be happy to talk with them more about that.
All right. Well, one more time, let folks know about this get-together tomorrow, what time and where it is and how they can come and what they can expect to see there.
It is tomorrow night at the University of Arizona. It's a conversation called Making Public Art Conservation Real, City of Tucson's Public Art Collection. It's at the College of Fine Arts in the Music Building starting at 5:30.
All right. We've been talking with Carol Varney, the Executive Director of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona. Carol, thank you so much for joining us here on Zona Politics on KXEI 91.3 FM.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, and we will be right back.
Zona Politics is made possible with the generous support of The Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org.
Welcome back to Zona Politics. I'm your host, Jim Ninsel, here on KXEI Community Radio 91.3 FM. We're joined now by Hank Stevenson, the editor of the Yellow Sheet. Yellow Sheet or Yellow Sheets, Hank?
Yellow Sheet Report.
The Yellow Sheet Report. It is a gossip rag, essentially, at the Arizona Legislature, if I can put it that way, Hank.
News, notes, and gossip is our tagline.
Underneath the umbrella of the Arizona Capital Times publication. So we like to check in with Hank and see what's going on up at the Arizona Legislature, our man at the Capitol. Hank, tell me, we saw a little bit of this session's been dragging on. We're past the 100-day mark. The big holdup seems to be the budget. There's a lot of disagreement about spending plans up there. And this week, though, we saw the emergence of a budget framework, perhaps, at the in the Arizona Senate.
Yeah, a budget emerged from the Senate and seemed to immediately tank. This was a budget that the Senate GOP put out, far less spending than what the governor had proposed in January, basically a little bit more than $500 million less than Ducey's budget proposal. A lot of that savings came from not spending on education, both K-12 and higher education. Ducey had put forward a budget in January that was, moderately well received by Democrats, education groups, had, a continuation of his 20 by 2020 plan, which was his big concession to teachers last year to get them to stop the strike and go back into the classroom, promised a 10% raise last year, 5% this year, and another 5% next year. And had promised a lot of money for capital improvements, basically fixing up the buildings, building new schools, had promised some money for the charter board to get some new investigators to kind of ferret out some of the scams that seem to be taking place in the charter industry. Had put some money in there for school resource officers and counselors in our school as part of his school safety plan. And most of that was either seriously culled back in the Senate GOP proposal or eliminated altogether.
Wow. So it sounds like this is not the kind of budget the governor would be looking to sign. What was reaction from the Republicans up there when this came out?
Well, the governor's office didn't return calls from reporters in the last 24 hours or so since this thing came out. But if you've been watching their Twitter feed, they've been putting up a lot of information about their budget proposal that they came out with in January. Even a lot of Senate Republicans don't like it. For example, Kate Brophy McGee, one of the more moderate Republicans in the Senate. She's been a pretty strong advocate for public education over the years, said, and I quote, "I think this is the worst budget I've seen since 2015. I hate it." And with the slim majorities between Republicans and Democrats in both the House and the Senate, in the Senate, they can only afford to lose two Republicans before they can't get something through the chamber without Democratic support. And I can count with three phone calls today. I basically counted three Republicans who were not in support of this budget proposal. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done before we actually cross that finish line this year. some people are kind of hoping that it'll be done by Memorial Day. I put a dollar in the sign you die pool earlier this week on early June. It seems like a reasonable guess at this point for me, but once the budget train starts rolling, it generally happens quickly. So it could all change on a dime.
What were the Democrats' reaction to this proposal?
Well, Democrats, I think very smartly kind of came out and said, well, we're working on our own budget proposal, and it's a lot closer to what Ducey talked about in January than this plan from the Senate Republicans. They say that they want to put more money into the rainy day fund. That was a huge thing in the governor's budget proposal. He wanted to get that rainy day fund up to $1 billion. In order to do that, you would need about $540 million. The Senate Republicans, for example, offered $175 million, so not even close. The Democrats are also saying that this budget proposal that they're still crafting would fully fund the school resource officers and counselors that Ducey asked for, and maybe even go a little bit beyond that. They're also talking about increasing district additional assistance, basically money to schools that they're a little bit flexible with. They can spend more or less how they see fit, getting some more money into that, and maybe even increasing the Ducey's 20 by 2020 plan, the teacher raises, going above that, or maybe just speeding up the payment of that so that teachers don't have to wait another 2 years, I guess, before that's fully implemented.
And what's going on over in the House with the budget? And no whispers of a budget emerging from the House to be a competing document?
Not yet. Usually these things happen in something resembling coordination. It seems like the Senate this year is out front, which granted they have, half the members that the House of Representatives has. So it's a little bit easier to get agreement, although they didn't really meet that that threshold with this budget. Small group meetings are happening. Basically, leadership will pull people into their offices and four or five at a time and say, okay, what do we need to give you to get you to a yes on this budget? But so far, and I've, been pounding the pavement, working the phones, I have not seen any documents come out of the House side. In fact, the House Speaker was pretty upset that our reporters were able to get a hold of the Senate budget documents. Very disappointed, he said, and that those are subject to change.
One would imagine.
What's that?
One would imagine that they are subject to change. Hey, I wanted, we got about a minute left here, and I wanted to spin over to, I know one of your favorite lawmakers up there, a lawmaker who's helped you win multiple awards, actually, with your reporting, former House Speaker, now State Senator David Gowan, and he was working on some fireworks legislation.
He's been working on fireworks legislation for a number of years, actually. They're generally speaking kind of minor tweaks to allow this or that firework in. Which a handful of lawmakers have kind of expanded our ability to use fireworks, generally within kind of set timelines around New Year's, that kind of thing, avoiding preferably the middle of summer when things are hot, dry, and combustible. This year, David Gowan is pushing another fireworks bill, kind of expanding what kind of fireworks we can buy in the state. The interesting thing there, of course, is that David Gowan
What does he do for a living again?
Well, he's a realtor. He was a magazine salesman. Over the years, he's been slinging fireworks. It shows up on his financial disclosure statements nowadays, but I think we first heard about this. Ran across him in like a Safeway parking lot with one of those little tents outside that you see selling fireworks. Just standing there with his cowboy hat, slinging fireworks. A state representative from Arizona making the state free to burn off fireworks at all times of the year.
He is got a little great little side hustle there.
Yeah, he also pushed a bill through the up to the governor's office Nunchucks were considered dangerous weapons and technically illegal in Arizona. David Gowan is also a martial arts master, so he has run a bill for several years, and I believe it's finally up at the governor's office that would legalize nunchucks in this state. So, you know, important issues.
Well, when nunchucks are outlawed, only outlaws will have nunchucks. We're going to have to leave it there, Hank. Thanks so much for checking in. Hank Stevenson from the Yellow Sheets Report at the Arizona Capital Times. Thanks so much. And that has been our latest episode of Zona Politics. I'm your host here on KXCI 91.3 FM Community Radio. My thanks to all my guests and all the help we get from the folks down here at KXCI to get this program together. We'll see you next week.
Support for Zona Politics is provided by Hotel Congress in historic downtown Tucson. Hotel Congress is known for its world-famous taproom, Cup Cafe, and Club Congress, offering local and national acts inside and outside on the plaza. More information at hotelcongress.com and 622-8848.